True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffin Daffer. Listen, I felt that again, monitoring X, monitoring social media, TikTok, and everything, there was something we needed to address. And that has to do with some individuals believing or pointing out, asking questions about could Nancy Guthrie's abductor be actually a serial killer? Could that be a possibility in this scenario? We're going to go through it. And at the end, I think hopefully you'll reach the same conclusion I reached. All right. So let's talk about a few things that are unique to Nancy Guthrie's case. And let me get her up on stage. So a few things that are unique to her case are that indeed she was taken. In other words, when you look at serial killers, do they typically take their bodies of the people they kill? The answer is no. Are there some exceptions to that? The answer is yes. But the vast majority do not at all take their bodies. Let me give you some examples of people who did. Gary Ridgway, he hid his bodies in and around that river. Ted Bundy, he liked to hide his bodies in the mountains. But I want to say kind of a big difference here, right? Bundy loved to hide his bodies because he practiced necrophilia. He liked to go back to them and then sexually assault the corpses. So for that reason, he liked to have them in sort of this burial bed that he could go back to. Rex Heuermann, yes, he also took the bodies to dump sites. But again, he committed at least 7 of the 8, he says, he killed at his own house. That's the Gilgo Beach killer, right? So that's different than being at somebody else's house. Most of the time, the reason killers, including serial killers, do not take their prey with them is because they don't want to further expose themselves to getting caught. Typically, these people want to keep on doing what they're doing. This is huge excitement. This is how they live. This is what excites them. Just like winning at bingo or winning a tennis match or, you know, getting a huge promotion might excite some of you. This is what they do for their existence. This is what thrills them. So they don't want to get caught. They also don't want to spend their time in prison. And so for obvious reasons, when you take a body with you, you are opening yourself up even at 2:30 in the morning, even if you have them gagged and bound in a trunk, you are still opening yourself up to getting caught, right? So this is why serial killers really very rarely take their bodies. It's about, and I want to get the percentage, I think, so of all murders, it's such a low percentage, right? About less than 1%, like 0.87% or something like that are serial killings. And then of those, about 30% use dump sites for very, very specific reasons to do with either where they were killed. So it wasn't commensurate with leaving them there. And then the other piece are those that practice necrophilia. All right. So let me just look at that. So now we've already just lowered the chance, right, that she could have been harmed by a serial killer, right? Because they took the body. So now we're dealing with a low percentage, maybe perhaps around 30% of all serial killers that ever took their bodies and disposed of them at dump sites or other locations. And again, when you look at it, you have to look at where they were killed. For instance, some people, and I wouldn't even call this a dump site, they committed the crimes at their house and then buried them behind their house. So I don't really consider that taking them anywhere when it's still on their property. So anyway, that's what our percentages tell us. And I think that's very important. So now we're down to about 30%. So how many use masks of serial killers? Very, very, very rare. Why? serial killers want to be intimate. They want to practice complete and absolute control. It's something that this is part of their fantasy, right? Typically, it's something that they want to have that closeness, that intimacy with their prey. They don't want a barrier in between what they're doing. They want them to see them. They want them to know who they are and see that control. Because again, they're not going to ever tell anybody about it because they're going to be dead. So for that reason, that is why they don't use a mask. Have any serial killers use masks? Yes, they have. For instance, Rex Krebs, and I have a picture of him up here. He's something else. He did use masks. He buried, again, in his backyard where he killed them. And he did use a mask. In those instances of using a mask, it's more typical for them to use that to play out this fantasy of them, much more than so than to use it because they wanted to maintain their anonymity. I mean, the person is going to be dead. So it's not that they're worried about being reported, right? They're dead. So it's more part of this playing out their fantasy. I know that it's sick. Another guy, Elroy Chester, he used masks. He had all sorts of different masks that he used. And again, this is believed to be part of the fantasy, not necessarily anything to do with trying to maintain his anonymity, you know, not being reported, being recognized, not being reported. So remember, when we're talking about serial killers, it's a whole different ball of wax than your regular killer, your home invader. You're somebody that's mad, retribution, passion, all these other reasons. This is somebody that literally wakes up and has woken up for usually back clear in their teen years when it usually begins, and fantasized and wanted to play it out and practiced in their head. And, you know, it was very important to them. Some people think Dennis Rader wore masks, but he did not during the crimes. He wore them afterwards. We've seen a lot of the film, Dennis Rader. I hate to call him by the name he asked to be called, BTK, in his letters to Cake TV and to the Wichita Eagle and Beacon. You know, it's just like a nickname. You can't give yourself a nickname, people. You might want to be called Beauty, but if people don't give it to you, it's really not your nickname. So Dennis Rader, that's what I'm going to call him. Wichita, Kansas area, Park City to be precise. He loved to do these elaborate photo shoots after, and in those cases, he would wear masks. Finally, I want to talk about the other one that we know used masks, and that was the Zodiac Killer. Remember, the Zodiac Killer was never found. This is a sketch from a believed rendering of what he looked like and what his general suit was like. And it's pretty extensive. Like, he was very well covered and, you know, very much hidden behind this shroud of his mask. Anyway, there you have it. You could see the Zodiac sign there. He mostly focused on killing couples. I want to talk about that next. So who are the prey of typical serial killers? The prey is not 80-year-old women typically. Very, very rare. So now we are in such a small minute of serial killers that A, take the bodies, B, use masks. So now if you're talking about people that bury and use masks, or I mean, take somebody to other locations and use masks, you're completely out of it because Zodiac left his victims, Elroy left his victims, and Rex Krebs buried them in his backyard. So that doesn't count as taking your victim to a night, or I mean, to a dump site. So now we're down to basically no one, you know, that are mass perpetrators, that are serial killers, and that actually take their victims. And now we're going to add in one more component, and that is, I'm sorry, I should have also mentioned the Golden State Killer, Joseph Angelo. That he sometimes wore a mask, but that's because he was a serial rapist. So oftentimes he would keep his person, you know, the person would live. And then later, of course, he was responsible for about 50 sexual assaults and then 13 murders. So it's believed that for those sexual assaults, he sometimes used masks, but not for the murders. And again, he left his victims. So again, you take, statistically speaking, and stats don't always say it because there are rare outliers, but I'm just saying, now you have, look at all these components. You have somebody that took the body, you have somebody that's masked, and now let's talk about the demographic. Elderly, basically, you know, a woman 84 years old that has almost no capability of defending herself. And so nevertheless, I'm just telling you, elderly people are not targeted by serial killers normally. In fact, it is such a rare percentage. So you see where I'm going with this. We were down to 30% that took, but then now you're down to mask, which is virtually no percentage that took and wore a mask. Then you're down to, again, even a lower percentage that would have preyed on 80-year-old women or older. And then now I want to talk about the sexual component of it. Almost all, I saw multiple sets of crime statistics looking at the FBI's crime statistics, looking at another set of crime statistics that just study serial killers. But basically, depending on what stats you look at, it's 70 to 100% of men that were serial killers had a sexual component. And I would lean more toward the 100%, even if for whatever reason it wasn't practiced, it had a sexual component. Like Dennis Rader, he didn't penetrate his victims, but he masturbated right beside him, right? So it's a sexual component. Others practice necrophilia. Others dreamt about it and then went back home. I mean, I always think of that big smile on Koberger's face. I know he was a mass murderer, not a serial killer. I think he was on his road to being a serial killer. I share that opinion with many, including Dr. Picotta and many, many other people in the field that believe strongly that he was just on his ascension. If that one would have worked, he would have been continuing his depravity. So there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Nancy Guthrie was sexually assaulted. In fact, the actual evidence is that she likely was not. All we have, at least that is known about, is a strand of hair that may or may not have anything to do with this case, and mixed DNA, likely, according to Dr. Fitzpatrick, likely from touch that has mixed profiles that likely will not be able to be solved because it can't be separated until, you know, and hopefully whenever that comes out, you know, someday when they're able to take three profiles and separate them all out, figure it all out. That's what they're working on, but they're not there yet. Because Nano specifically said it was more than two, which would mean three or even more. So when you look at all of that, when you consider all of this, now look at how low we are. I'm going to go through it one more time if you're just joining. Serial killers rarely take their victims. And when they do, it's for very specific purpose, which includes necrophilia. And it also includes necrophilia, and it also includes having very specific dump sites based on where the person was killed. In other words, like Rex Heerman, he killed them in his house, so he can't pick them up and take, you know, keep them there, right? So depending on where they're killed, if they're killed in your vehicle, if they're killed someplace that is associated with you, you're obviously going to take them and bury them. So very specific reasons typically. And again, about 30%. Then of that 30%, who wears masks? Extremely low percentage of that 30%. I found about 4: Rex Krebs, Elroy Chester, Zodiac Killer, Joseph DeAngelo. Again, that's Golden State. But remember, that was just when he was not planning on killing, you know, when because he was a serial rapist too, who converted. So I don't even count him because as a serial killer, he didn't wear a mask. Again, you don't need to wear a mask because your victim is going to be deceased. And secondarily, the big reason is that puts this big barrier between the person and their victim. This is something that is intimate. It's something that they want that person to see them. They want to terrorize them. And with a mask on, it's difficult for them to accomplish that. Sometimes, though, we talked about how in certain cases, like Zodiac, of course, it's believed that he was actually this would have been part of his fantasy, right? All right. Then we talked about the sexual component. So now, again, that's a large part, 70 to 100%, depending on the range of time you're looking at and what you're reading from. But when you look at that, essentially those individuals, that's a great percentage of male violators, a really huge percentage of male violators. But again, not the ones that are masked, not the ones that take their bodies. And so again, our percentage has just dropped down to rock bottom of statistically speaking, what that would mean in terms of having to come together. I'm going to add in a final component, and that is people who actually conducted surveillance, right? People who actually conducted surveillance. And we know surveillance was conducted because, look, I've got this from the Guthries. It looks like they were looking specifically at the night before, as well as the 11th, and then, of course, the morning of the hit wouldn't have been surveillance. That's the hit. I have this quote from Nanos that essentially backs that up. And if you saw this interview, it was very clear that the 11th is important. And we've known that from the beginning based on neighbors who were interviewed and the asking of surveillance from them, surveillance photos from Ring Cam or Nest camera footage on the 11th. So we know the 11th was important. We believe that it is based on what I call site surveys, and essentially this killer wanting to make sure that they were prepped and ready and understood what they were going to do and what that activity was like in those night hours. Okay. So individuals who did that, again, rare. Joseph DeAngelo, Golden State Killer, he did extensive pre-attack procedures. So did Dennis Rader, extensive pre-attack procedures, surveilling, conducting site surveys and making sure he was very well prepared. The Night Stalker, he also very much prepared. That's another pre-attack preparer. But most of these people, it wasn't something that they did for weeks or months to prepare or days to prepare. No. That wasn't the case. In most serial killers, they don't do that advanced preparation. It's rare. So you can see then when you put together the rarities, so I would say it is rare for sexual assault not to be used or part of what was played out. And at least in that house, there seems to be no sign of that from the reporting. rare to use a mask, rare to use pre-attack surveillance methods. Rare to take the body. Did I hit all my points here? Yeah, I think that's it. So rare to not have sexual assault, rare to have pre-attack methods, in other words, surveillance, rare to use a mask. Oh, I know the other one. Rare to pick an 80-year-old in their house. And again, it is about control and about dominance and all of that. But when you add it all together, it does not make any sense. We've seen another murder that I've talked about extensively before was Missy Beavers. And this individual, all suited up, he used a hammer to bludgeon her. You might read that he used a gun. That is just not true. He used a hammer to bludgeon her. This was in Mansfield, Texas. Never been caught. I think completely focused on her. This was at about 5 a.m. in the morning. This was at a church where she always worked out. She taught workout classes, actually, called Camp Gladiator. I'm so familiar with it because one of my best friends and my tennis partner, so one of my best friends separate and my tennis partner at the time, they were all Camp Gladiator. They don't call them coaches, trainers, Camp Gladiator trainers. And then they call the people who do this is, they call them campers. It's so funny. It's such an interesting model. It's literally like Amway, but their business model. But not to digress, they were friends with Missy Beavers. So this is a case that has always been in my craw. It's never been solved. But this is one of the cases that I think is most closely related in a lot of respects to Nancy Guthrie. Because you have somebody that I think completely targeted and then somebody that went in an attack knowing exactly where she would be. Having said that, the big difference here is, of course, the relationship with Savannah Guthrie. And I think the biggest and final point I want to make, and that is a couple of things. Everybody's favorite, I'm going to put it up on stage. Sheriff Nanos specifically said recently when asked about motive that the motive hadn't changed from what they first thought the motive was. What did they first think the motive was? They thought it was a kidnapping. So just to be clear, I do not think this was any sort of serial killing. I don't think that was the purpose. I don't think we have a mask serial killer focusing on 80-year-olds that doesn't use sexual assault, that has pre-planning measures, and that wears a mask. I don't think that that's where we're at on this case. I think this was truly a kidnapping focused on Nancy Guthrie. I don't know whether that was because of her relationship with her daughter, Savannah, but I truly think it was. Savannah Guthrie thinks it was. She cried really quite emotionally on NBC in the interview with Hoda. She thinks it's her. Her brother thinks it's her. It's that relationship that led to this tragedy, that led to Nancy being targeted. I've talked all about Nancy, her politics, things like that, whether that could be a possibility. But nevertheless, I believe it was a kidnapping gone horribly bad. Do I think that this family was specifically hated? Targeted retribution? Yes, I do. And I base that on what those first two notes. I'm going to tell you the proof we have that the first two notes are real. The first two notes, let's just work backwards. Savannah Guthrie says she believes they're real. Anybody who doesn't think she has insider information about this, she does, because even though law enforcement doesn't give a lot of specifics, when law enforcement asks her and Cameron and Annie to come together and do that first video, and then Cameron to do the second one, and then Savannah to do the third, fourth, and fifth one, that was for a reason. Law enforcement is not going to do that if they do not believe that those notes are relative to the case and relevant to who abducted her. I'll say it again. I do not believe that they were for money. They went on day two, so they went pretty timely to the local stations. When they didn't get the media play they wanted, they went 12 hours later to TMZ. This tells me that motive is controlling the narrative. It's all about punishing Savannah, punishing the Guthries, having them suffer, having us in the news. That is making them suffer. To know, to read notes with details about your mom. Remember, they had details, what she was wearing, about the nightstand, about the floodlight, and others that I'm sure were in there that we don't know. And saying, if we don't get the money by this date, X is going to happen. We still don't know what X is, but you can imagine it's probably some horrible physical harm to her. And then the final date, you know, came and went, and they didn't get their money. And they sent a note, if we don't get our money by this date, and we know that because of the answer to the note. You can tell what the notes say, at least in part, by the answers given by the family, by their retorts, by their response, by what the BAU put together. So those two notes, I believe, based on Savannah, what Savannah has said, based on the FBI and their actions and that Cecil B. DeMille they put together, the BAU being involved, they believe those notes are related. I'm not talking about the latter notes. We don't know about those, where that person asked for half a Bitcoin and then a full Bitcoin. You know, I don't know about those notes. I don't know if they know. All I know is I find it very interesting that they're using the exact same modus operandi to reach out to these media outlets. And they did that, by the way, before they knew the FBI was going to be at a stalemate with solving where these emails were from. Remember, those came in very early on as well, just days later. So the person who did it, like I said, used the exact same MO. Obviously, it was in the news, so they could have said, oh, good, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to ask for Bitcoin. We're going to do it to the same media outlets. And these could just be those evil ones that exist in multiple missing person cases where they just get their jollies off of having a family suffer like that, just torturing and tormenting a family when their loved one is gone missing, right? So that could be exactly. Listen, the reason they reached out to TMZ was very tactically sound. I want to say this. They went to the Tucson stations, I believe, because they're very familiar with Tucson. They're from Tucson. And they wanted to reach that Tucson audience because that is the epicenter of Nancy's world, Annie's world, Tommaso's world, Savannah's world. I shouldn't say the epicenter for Savannah now. Now her epicenter is New York, but her roots, everything she grew up, she's the daughter of Tucson. That is her roots, her people. And that's what they wanted to go after. This was very thought out. And when they didn't get the play they wanted in the media, this wasn't about getting money. This was about getting power. When they did not get that play, why go to TMZ? I pointed this out before, but let me reiterate. TMZ has a massive audience. Millions and millions. I think 8 million on Twitter alone, TikTok. They have one of the most massive social media audience reach of anyone. Then they also have mainstream media. They have their own show. They have podcasts. They have YouTube. They are huge. For anybody who doesn't think their reach is huge, please, it's bigger than almost anyone in the area of celebrity information and news combined with true crime. That is their niche. First is celebrities. Well, guess who's a celebrity? Her daughter. So they wanted to reach that group. Second of all, they wanted to reach true crimers, the true crime community, because people watch TMZ because they are everywhere. They own the Celeste Rivas D4VD story. They were on top of the Charlie Kirk murder. They got that first footage of Tyler Robinson walking in the adjacent housing community with the, you know, gun stuffed in his pants. They can pay for information. They've been in LA forever, so they have great sources within that industry. They have a lot of people working for them. So I just want to make it clear that TMZ made total sense for what they were trying to accomplish. They weren't trying to get money. If they were, they would have kept it quiet before law enforcement was ever involved. They would have reached out to Tommaso and Annie or left a note on scene. This wasn't about money. At least initially, because I believe she died. She died, sadly. I mean, that's just my belief. Kidnapping, not a serial murder, a kidnapping, an abduction gone totally south, and then turned to continued torment for the Guthrie family. Everyone, thanks. I just wanted to reach out and give you background why I personally don't believe this has anything to do with serial killing. I just don't. There's nothing that points to that, as I've hopefully pretty meticulously gone out and pointed out. When you put it all together, it doesn't make any sense. But what does make sense is a planned kidnapping gone horribly wrong. That's Occam's razor. This is an outlier for sure, but that's what Occam's razor tells us. And it tells us, I believe, that she died very early. And their plan went awry and they continued their torment. So anyway, I really want to appreciate each of you for being here and for being here earlier than normal. But look, you guys are here. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful to have y'all here. And again, sorry to bring you in a little bit earlier this morning. I have a media obligation coming up here. And so I just want to thank each of you. And I still have those two experiments. I still have the Cameron deep dive. And I still have Savannah Guthrie's husband deep dive, which I have not done yet. Everybody who is a member, $3.99 or more, you're going to be up for being chosen on August 16th, or if this case is broken before then, so I can send you a little goodie bag of FBI memorabilia. I would love to do that for y'all, and I thank each and every one of you for being here. Until next time, may justice be served for the Justice family and for all the missing.